Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, January 20, 2015. Hundreds of women demonstrate at Juba Teaching Hospital where victims of the latest fighting were transported.
These are people who are independent before. They're eating in their own place now. They don't have food. They don't have anything that made the refugees exit within their own constituency for no good reason up to now. That's why they are like that. You see, they are annoyed.
And SPLA factions meeting in Arusha are said to be closer to reaching an agreement on most party issues.
This is a great achievement, and we, the people of South Sudan, the leadership of the SPLM, are grateful for this progress and grateful to our comrades and brothers from the CCM.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But first, we go to Juba Teaching Hospital. Hundreds of angry women gathered at the gate of Juba Teaching Hospital today to peacefully protest against the intercommunal clashes between Bari and Mundari communities over the weekend. The director for accidents and emergencies at the hospital told South Sudan in Focus that 8 people were killed and 10 others were wounded during the weekend skirmishes. Abraham Modut denied reports that the women had blocked the entrance to Juba Teaching Hospital. He says his staff is busy treating victims of the violence.
No, that is actually something with the security. We did not go there. We don't know that information. But basically, yes, we have received some few people who are having some injuries, mild injuries, and they are being managed in the hospital. Yeah, those who are injured, they may reach up to 10.
Anti-riot police, the military police, and other security officers prevented the women from entering the hospital premises. Paul Logali Jumi is a lawmaker representing Northern Bari Payam. He says the women and many others have been displaced by the weekend violence.
Now, instead of staying peacefully in their village, now they become displaced people in Juba. Now, waiting, looking for food to be assisted. These are people who are independent before. They're eating in their own place now. They don't have food. They don't have anything that made the refugees exit within their own constituency for no good reason up to now. That's why they are like that. You see, they are annoyed.
The media were not allowed to pass through the entrance to Juba Teaching Hospital or speak to the demonstrators. The hospital administrator says the mortuary has bodies that were brought from Northern Bari Payam. He is downplaying the casualty figures resulting from the fighting.
Well, currently we cannot verify well because we are going to the statistical data to go and check them in the mortuary, but in the course of the day we shall let you know. But they may not reach 10, they may not go up to 8 even.
The demonstration follows 2 days of clashes that broke out between 2 neighboring communities in North Juba County, where fighting erupted over land. Jumi, who represents North Juba County, says the situation is getting out of control.
You cannot do reconciliation if there's no peace, you know. If people are now not allowed to go back to their places, how do you sit to do reconciliation? Reconciliation is the result when people have come to understand one another and say, let's sit down and find out what are the causes for all this, you know.
There is no official statement from the government of South Sudan on the latest violence in Central Equatorial State. South Sudan in Focus will continue to update listeners as information becomes available. The South Sudan Army says government forces are still fighting rebels in Lake State, where clashes erupted yesterday. SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer says fighting has also flared up in Unity State, but a spokesman for the rebels is denying any involvement in the latest violence. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Aguer says fighting between the SPLA and rebels allied with the former vice president Riek Machar began in Lake State yesterday. The SPLA spokesman says it has been difficult getting details from the ground about the clashes.
The communication in the area is very poor as there is no network in that part of Lake State. But we are waiting to know exactly what are the details of that attack.
Aguer says he believes the SPLA is pursuing the rebels but was unable to provide details.
We don't know as we speak whether they were being pursued toward Unity State.
Aguirre yesterday blamed rebels loyal to Machar of attacking government positions in Maper village in Rumbeke North County. Maper is in Lake State, which has been relatively peaceful since South Sudan erupted in violence in December 2013. The SPLA spokesman says the rebels are also responsible for an attack in Unity State.
Yesterday, the same day, forces of Riek Machar in Unity State attack and burn a well of oil in a place called Tom's House. Tom's House is at the borders and to the north of Panakwaj, between Panakwaj and Panpao.
Lul Roy Kwong, the military spokesman for the rebels, says he has seen reports that indicate that civilians were the main victims of the fighting in Lake State.
And I will continue to deny that our commanders in the front line have not claimed any responsibility. And those who were killed are civilians, women and children, according to the reports I've read. It is not our culture to attack any place and kill women and children. And these are the two reasons why I've been consistent in denying any responsibility.
Kwang says intercommunal clashes and cattle raids are common in Lake State and could be behind the fighting.
There is no evidence showing that our forces were the ones that engaged the government troops between Madol and Mapel. I'm suspecting cattle rustlers, and maybe the government troops have been pursuing cattle rustlers back to Unity State.
UN-run Radio Miraya said yesterday that several houses were burnt down and an unspecified number of civilians were killed in the clashes in Lake State. There has been no independent confirmation that the fighting there involved the SPLA and rebel forces. The army has also accused the rebels of launching attacks over the weekend in the northern part of Upper Nile State. Kwang told South Sudan in Focus yesterday that the SPLA was to blame for the Upper Nile fighting. The clashes are the latest in a series of violations of the cessation of hostilities agreement brokered by regional group IGAD and signed by the government and armed opposition in January last year. The deal, which was supposed to end the fighting, has never taken hold. IGAD-led peace talks were adjourned indefinitely last month. A regional summit meeting on South Sudan is due to be held at the end of this month on the sidelines of an African Union meeting in Addis Ababa. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Mediators representing factions of South Sudan's ruling party say they have agreed to more than 90% of the issues being discussed in Arusha, Tanzania. Three SPLM groups representing President Salva Kiir, rebel leader Riek Machar, and former political detainees have been meeting in Arusha for the past 4 months. As Philip Thornaleu reports from Juba, delegates say an agreement will likely be signed tomorrow.
Akol Paul Kurdit is a member of the SPLM delegation that represents President Kiir in Arusha. Kurdit told reporters at Juba Airport today that the SPLM leaders have finally sought out their differences.
Significant progress has been made in the talks, and general agreement has been reached by all parties to the talks. This is a great achievement, and we, the people of South Sudan, the leadership of the SPLM, are grateful for this progress and grateful to our comrades and brothers from the CCM.
Kodi says President Kiir, rebel leader Riek Machar, and former SPLM Secretary General Pagana Amom, who is the leader of 10 former detainees, will review a draft agreement in Arusha tomorrow. He says he hopes all SPLM leaders will agree on what he calls pending issues and sign an agreement. Abdurrahman Omari Kikana is Secretary General of Chama Cha Mapinduzi, the ruling party of Tanzania, which is mediating the SPLM meeting. He says he has no reason to doubt that an agreement will be signed in Arusha tomorrow.
95% of the document has been agreed. Only 5 is pending. And this 5% will need a consultation, the advice and the wisdom of the leaders of the region. We have no reason to doubt that tomorrow the three groups will sign an agreement to reunite the SPLM family and again take the leadership of this great country and the great people of South Sudan to its destiny.
Kinana says the factions have agreed on the political structural leadership of SPLM and did not elaborate. He says a regional summit will be hosted by Tanzanian President Jakaya Kikwete in the near future. Kinana says it is important to note that no one is imposing an agreement on the three parties.
They are meeting on their own. They discuss the genesis of the crisis on their own, and they come up with solutions between themselves. This is what they have been doing since October last year. And I want to assure you that they are progressing very well. They have come up with a draft document, which hopefully will be signed tomorrow in the presence of about 4 heads of state of the neighboring countries.
Kinana says Ugandan President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni, Ethiopian Prime Minister Desalegn Haile Mariam, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta, and the Vice President of the South Africa's ruling ANC party are expected to attend a signing ceremony. And he says President Kiir will be invited to the Arusha meeting after consulting with these delegates. The Arusha talks are being held on the sidelines of the IGAD-mediated South Sudan peace talks in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa. Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter addressing the Ebola crisis.
Hello, I'm Jimmy Carter. I would like to talk with you about the heroes all around you. Some of these heroes are people who had Ebola, went to a treatment center, and got better. These people can no longer spread Ebola, and their families and communities can safely welcome them back home. Just as deserving of our respect are the heroes, many of them your neighbors, who fight Ebola every day as nurses, hospital cleaners, burial teams, ambulance drivers, and community health workers. Help and respect these brave people as they do their jobs. Working together, we can stop Ebola.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what is the cause of severe pains along your joints when you get old? You'll get an answer right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can the government support small-scale business enterprises?
I think the government has to give some people a little something, money, so that they should support them. And after that, yeah, there will be something in the future.
I think government can support small-scale business enterprise by giving them loans, whereby it can help them to develop their business.
They can introduce sponsorship programs and relieve the small-scale business enterprises of some financial constraints.
By way of giving the financial assistance for someone who wants to be in the small business enterprises.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today, we are talking about bone regeneration. Osteoarthritis is a common condition seen in older people in which the tissue between the joints become worn down, causing severe pain. In what could be an important development for people who suffer from it, U.S. researchers have isolated stem cells in adult mice that regenerate both worn tissue or cartilage and bone. VOA's Jessica Bowman reports.
For the past decade, researchers have been trying to locate and isolate stem cells in the spongy tissue or marrow of bones of experimental animals. The so-called osteochondroreticular or OCR cells are capable of renewing and generating important bone and cartilage cells. Researchers at Columbia University Medical Center in New York identified these master cells in the marrow. When grown in the lab and transplanted back into a fracture site in mice, they helped repair the broken bones. Siddhartha Mukherjee, the study's senior author, says similar stem cells can exist in the human skeletal system.
The real provocative experiment, the provocative idea is being able to do this in humans, being able to extract out these skeletal stem cells from humans and being able to put them back in and repair complex fracture defects or osteoarthritis defects.
He notes that children have more bone stem cells than adults, which may explain why the bones of young people repair more easily than fractures in adults. Mukherjee says the next step is to try to identify the OCR cells in humans and attempt to use them to repair complex bone and cartilage injuries. Once cartilage is injured or destroyed in older people, as in osteoarthritis, Mukherjee says it does not repair itself. The research was funded by the U.S. National Institutes of Health and the American Cancer Society, among others, and it's described in a paper published online in the journal Cell. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And we turn now to Southern Africa, where Zambian voters cast their ballots today in an election to complete the term of the late President Michael Sata, who died in an office in October last year. There are 11 candidates on the ballot, but many say it's a close race between Defense and Justice Minister Edgar Lungu of Mr. Sata's Patriotic Front Party and Hakainde Hichilema, who heads the Opposition United Party for the National Development. Gillian Parker is in Lusaka and reports for VOA News.
Zambians braved heavy seasonal rains to cast their vote in an election with no clear front runner. Although voting may be extended because of heavy rains, that could hinder ballot collection in isolated rural areas. Ruling Patriotic Front candidate Edgar Lungu arrived at his polling station in Chawana Township, Lusaka, battling a cheering scrum in order to cast his vote. Lungu has tapped into the popular support for deceased President Michael Sata, who founded and dominated the Patriotic Front, and whose caustic tongue earned him the moniker King Cobra. The Patriotic Front campaign has been built upon Sata's populist policies to uplift the poor and develop infrastructure, a sentiment that will win votes in a nation where 60% of the 14 million population live in poverty. Civil servant Ivanka Pika, who benefited from a 50% salary increase, says Lungu has her vote.
We are at least getting salaries on a better way. When I entered my job profession, I used to get about 1.7 million, but he increased it to a double portion. So that's why I would also go again for this. So I'm going to make sure that I give him a vote.
But the International Monetary Fund warns the next government will have to rein in excessive public spending that prompted the Kwacha currency to fall last year. Zambia is coping with a gaping budget deficit and a sliding copper price that is at a six-year low. Copper accounts for about 70% of Zambia's exports and 13% of its GDP. Across the city, candidate Hakainde Hichilema, the leader of the United Party for National Development, the Patriotic Front's main opponent, addressed constituents waiting in line. Hichilema is one of Zambia's richest businessmen, owning the country's second largest cattle ranch. Popular with businesses, he has pledged to bring spending under control. He spoke to VOA before heading to the ballot box.
Why we are seeking public office is to ensure that we can create an attractive and basically business and investment environment, which is not just attractive but consistent, predictable and credible. Because then we can generate more investments, create jobs out of there and of course create value to support the social sectors.
Striding from a muddy polling station in Chawama Township, farmer Machindi Rayson says he is ready for change.
I have suffered a lot. Look at this road which you have seen. No drainages, no whatever, things like that. That's why we try to change. Maybe you can have a better life. Like farmers, we are not yet paid now. But they promise that after 2 weeks, you are going to get your money. But now, up to now, we are still starving. I don't know where we are going to find money to buy fertilizer. That's one actually is a farmer. He knows those details.
Hichilema has profited from politicians leapfrogging from rival parties riddled with factionalism. The Movement for Multi-Party Democracy, the largest opposition party that ruled for 20 years before losing to the Patriotic Front 3 years ago, was embroiled in a bitter leadership battle. Its supporters could influence the outcome of the by-election. Results are expected to start arriving on Wednesday, with the winner declared by Friday. Gillian Parker for VOA News, Lusaka.
You You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Witnesses are reporting that Shiite militiamen have stormed the presidential complex in the Yemeni capital of Sana'a. Earlier today, the rebel group known as the Houthis was said to be in talks to end a standoff after the fighters surrounded the prime minister's residence overnight. On Saturday, the Houthis kidnapped President Abed Rabo Mansour Hadi's chief of staff as the government was trying to draft a new constitution. The rebels are calling for greater rights for Yemen's Shiite minority. They overran the capital in September and later signed a deal calling for a new government, but violence has continued. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani today introduced his cabinet nominees to the parliament's lower house for a vote of confidence. The move came nearly 4 months after Ghani took office because of prolonged negotiations with his election rival turned coalition partner Abdullah Abdullah on finalizing the list. Under a deal mediated by the United States following a disputed presidential election, Abdullah shares power over appointments as the chief executive officer of the so-called National Unity Government led by President Ghani. Prior to presenting the list of 27 candidates, including three women, the Afghan leader addressed the lawmakers and highlighted the challenges facing Afghanistan, including security and the economy. And finally, the International Monetary Fund has trimmed its 2015 forecast for global economic growth as the world faces what the group's chief economist calls strong and complex cross currents. Despite reducing its growth forecast from its last projection in October from 3.8 to 3.5%, the IMF's chief economist said the world's economy is expected to grow slightly faster this year than it did in 2014. Oil prices and fluctuating global exchange rates were two key points the group highlighted in its latest report. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
A new report by the International Labour Organization warns more than 212 million people around the world will be out of work by 2019. This is up from the current 201 million unemployed. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch of the ILO's World Employment and Social Outlook Trends 2015 report in Geneva.
The International Labour Organization reports more than 61 million jobs have been lost since the start of the global economic crisis in 2008. And because of tepid recovery, unemployment levels will rise until the end of the decade. The ILO warns unemployment combined with widening inequalities could lead to growing turbulence in many societies. It says a likely trigger for social unrest will be young people between the ages of 15 and 24, who are three times more likely to be unemployed than adults. In 2014, youth unemployment was almost 13%. ILO head of research, Raymond Torres, says there is an undeniable link between social unrest and the labor market.
We have done an analysis which actually very much follows what has been done in other organizations like the IMF that shows that there is a link between inequalities and the ability for economies to rebound, to recover. In high inequality countries, it is more difficult to rebound than in low inequality countries.
The report finds improved employment in the United States and Japan, but adds unemployment remains high in many advanced economies, particularly in Europe. It notes three-quarters of the world's vulnerable employment, those who are self-employed or are unpaid family workers, are in South Asia and sub-Saharan Africa. The ILO says sub-Saharan Africa has the highest rate of working poverty and vulnerable employment across all regions. It says the Ebola virus in West Africa has had a significant toll on Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. ILO Director General Guy Ryder says 319 million workers, one out of 10 globally, are in extreme poverty, earning less than $1.25 a day.
And though those figures have come down in recent years, the rate of decline has been retarded quite significantly, period of the crisis. Notwithstanding all of that, it's worth noting as well that the global middle class continues to grow, and we define that global middle class as those enjoying a consumption level of between $4 and $13 US dollars per capita per day. They make up now 34% of total employment in the developing world.
The report says the employment outlook has deteriorated in the Arab region and parts of Latin America and the Caribbean. It says employment prospects in many advanced economies and several Asian countries may improve if the steep decline in oil and gas prices is sustained. But it notes labor markets will suffer in oil and gas-producing countries, especially in Latin America, Africa, and the Arab region. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Good personal hygiene is important to protect you, your family, and your community. More than 5,000 children die every day from diarrhea and stomach disorders caused by the bacteria found in human waste. People get sick when these bacteria are spread from person to person on their hands or clothing. But there are things you can do to help stop the spread of infection. Try to relieve yourself far away from where you cook, eat, and store food. Wash your hands thoroughly with soap and water after using the latrine. And keep cuts and scrapes clean and covered until they're healed. It is important to you and your family to understand the threat of diseases that can be spread by human waste and avoid them by staying clean.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com.
southsudan@voanews.com.
We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan.
www.voanews.com/South Sudan.
Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
And that information about us brings us to the end of this show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Salam by Lomerica Jazz Band. We have been listening to Lomarika Jasban with that song, Salam. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. You have a peaceful evening, and remember to tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.